This time on Last Impressions number 10. The role of government in charity, innovation, waitressing, and grabbing parents off the street and locking them up. I'm Justin Katz. So appropriately, we listened to a little Elvis on the way in. That's from his song Trouble, which always comes into mind when somebody responds to me in a way that makes them think I'm bad because the chorus of that song is because I'm evil. So we'll hear a little of that song at the end of this podcast. But the reason I brought that up and the reason that seemed relevant to me is because I want to talk about the role of government. Because I'm evil, my middle name is misery. The whole institution exists out there, from the media and local activists, union activists, progressives marching in the street with their little what cheer band. The whole thing ramps right up to the point that when you challenge their conception of, or the concept of the role of government, you are the bad guy. And they make sure you know that they think that. You're beneath contempt. You're deplorable. Right? Thanks to Hillary Clinton for that succinct expression of their point of view. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to question government's role here. Locally, in Tiverton, the relevance is that I'm on a budget committee, and I've been arguing for years, really, in putting in budgets that make the point as well. But and as on a budget committee, I've been arguing that it isn't the role of government to take money from people to give to other people. That's not what it's for. You can't go into your neighbor's house and say, hey, look, I've got a great idea that I think will really be nice for our community to do. And rather than ask you to donate or provide you something of value as in return for your donation, I'm going to get some political friends together and we're going to take it from you. and if you don't like it, well, you know, we've got these police here with the guns and we've got the right to take your house away and maybe lock you up if things go that far. So it's not the role of government, local, state, federal, global, the United Nations to take your money to give to charities or to other people or for certain events that they happen to like. It's just like legislative grants. You're taking money and in that case, pretty nakedly using it to buy political favor. That's basically the objection to political grants. That's the whole idea of them. Now, in Tiverton, I know this for a fact, and legislative grants as well with Little Leagues and other and things that help the homeless or what have you, these are great organizations very often, and they do wonderful work, and they're worth supporting, and I do believe we have a moral obligation to help each other, help our neighbors, and everybody is our neighbor. But there are other organizations that do wonderful work and aren't funded, operating all the time. And the more we loop them in and validate just the ones that get government subsidies, the worse we make things, I think. For the ones who are just trying to do it, the more extraneous, the more extra all the charitable activities are. Some years ago, there was an argument about, there was a survey or something like that, some kind of study that showed that people in red states and conservative states were more charitable. And some of the quips and responses from the folks up in, say, Boston were, yes, we're just as charitable. We just call it taxes. So that's not charity. That's confiscating people's money to give to somebody else. Basically, that's all it comes down to. So in this case, I've been arguing that government has a defined role. There are some things we use government to accomplish, and we have to be careful about that. And we should really be circumscribed and very restrictive on what we do with the mechanism of government because, as I said, government can take your money. They can lock you up. They can even kill you or authorize people to kill you, lock you up, and take your money. So all of its expenses should be transactional. So what I mean by that is we all have agreed that government should be involved in policing. The police need to purchase equipment. They need services, an electrician to work on their building, contractors to do whatever, what have you. In that activity, they contract, they give money to receive a service. It's transactional. It's not just to encourage their activities, which is the argument behind giving to charity. This is a good thing they're doing, and we want to encourage it in our community or our state or our country, so we're going to give them money as encouragement. But that's not transactional. That's just choosing to hand money away and express a value, which isn't what government's for. We have other mechanisms in society for that. Now, of course, the Budget Committee didn't just go after a group of charities. There's also some activities that the town has funded, and it's called winter recreation, but it's actually the budget's tripled in the past couple of years. It went from $800 or $900 a couple of years ago to $2,500 in the budget that's being discussed now. So basically this is a big elaborate Christmas party and a trunk or treat where kids walk around, parents decorate the trunks of their cars, and kids walk around a parking lot and get the candy. And these very activities are things I've organized for nonprofits as fundraisers. And here's government coming along, and I don't know what the market is for trunk-or-treats, how many people are going to hit, but there's a free government one, and there's the one that's fundraising. And of course, when you're fundraising, you know, you get a store to donate extra candy, and so if one family doesn't have the money to supply their own, then, you know, you give it to them. Not a big deal. But these are community activities the community should do, but when government steps in, people stop doing them and start seeing them as an entitlement. And now government is not only responsible for keeping our streets safe, maybe educating our children and paying for charities, now providing community activities that bring us all together for a night of sitting with Santa Claus, to next entertaining us. I mean, there's no end to this. What you can, when you decide you're able to take people's money and spend it on things you want, there's no end to it. So naturally, of course, we're hearing, because we did reduce some of those lines, that we want to hurt the poor and ban Santa Claus, you know, because I'm evil. No, that's ridiculous. We have a moral obligation to help each other. Communities should get together and do things, especially for children. There should be gatherings, there should be this and that. But this should be voluntary. This should be something where you invest in your community with your own activities and you come together. It doesn't involve taking other people's money away. I mean, what it comes down to is government and community are not the same thing. There's government, which handles a small segment of actual activity that we can't do elsewise because it involves taking people's money, shooting them, or locking them up. And there's other stuff. There's business. Business interactions are voluntary community activities. The transaction is just money. There's a place for that. Charity, religious activities, there's a place for that in the community. There are other groups. There are children's sports leagues. There are various clubs. There's a rifle club, a yacht club. This is all the ways that people come together in a community. And government does not have to govern every aspect of it. Now, that's especially true in Rhode Island and probably all or most of our municipalities, when government is struggling to accomplish just the basic objectives, the things we all agree this is what government does. When that is falling away, like roads and bridges, for example, or education, well, we could argue whether in the long run that's a good idea, but for the foreseeable future, that's a government activity. When these things are falling apart, what are we doing spending money on other stuff, confiscating money on other stuff? It shuffles around, you know, resources and influence. But in that regard, this week, Tara Granahan had on WPRO 6:30 a.m., 99.7 FM, Richard Culotta, who is, for the moment, Rhode Island's chief innovation director or executive or something like that. We've since learned that he's on his way out the door to a private sector nonprofit. But here's Tara really kind of getting right at this question of what is government for?
Are you aware of the UHIP situation?
I certainly am aware of it. It's not a project that we're directly involved in. That is our CIO team. I'm aware of it, certainly.
So when you say you're working on some experiments, is the word you keep using, people are very frustrated here. We've got departments that are in shambles, and we're experimenting with your innovation office. Would you be better utilized over there with your technology expertise? And I thought we were led to believe that that's sort of where you would be, to beef up the technological links to the community, and that's where we're suffering. Would you be better utilized with a hands-on position as opposed to,
yeah,
to the
again,
experimenting?
We have a very hands-on position, but I'm not a CIO, right? I'm not an IT.
Now, he goes on to say he's not the technical guy, really, when, you know, that was a large part of what the state was sold on, which was Tara's point. But what she's getting at, we've got this unified health infrastructure project where people who need government services aren't getting them. We've got a DMV with lines out the door and a computer upgrade that's been going on for, I don't know, since the Carter administration in Washington. It's been a long time. But these things aren't getting done properly. And here we are experimenting with this guy whose whole position is an experiment, because technically the government isn't paying for it. It's through the Rhode Island College Foundation, and now he's fundraising to raise that money for the foundation. I mean, it feels like this guy, somebody knew him and said, hey, could you find a role for him for a few years? But that's what it feels like. I don't have any evidence of that. So what are we doing? Again, what are we doing with all these laws and all these things that pass the legislature and all these experimental projects and handed out money to corporate cronies? And let's just do the things that government is supposed to do. Start there, right? When that's all taken care of, then we'll talk, right? But there's this mentality out there that's just so thoroughly entrenched. And Tara actually had another guest on this week, our favorite progressive Democrat, state representative from Providence, Moira Walsh, who, as a reminder, is very young, in her 20s. She's been a waitress. Right now, she's just a full-time legislator, I take it. But here, this was especially disturbing because it seemed like Tara was agreeing with her on something. That's the whole concept behind the conversation was wrong. So here it is. Actually, before I play it, let me set it up a little bit. As I said, Walsh has been a waitress in her career. And so they're talking about legislation she's put in that would start to change the way tipping works and a percentage, the minimum wage for tippers, so that the ratio of minimum wage versus tips in your income changes. And she's explaining why this is a good and necessary idea.
You know, because you're putting your employee in a place where they have to decide who their boss is.
Mm-hmm.
Is their boss the person who they don't technically collect a paycheck from, who asks them to wash windows and clean floors and do this, that, and the other? Or is their boss the customer who doesn't care about them dusting the light bulbs and wants their drink refill right now? And so we need to find a way to put the employee in a position to succeed. I made the point last night. I've had my tip docked for dirty plates. I'm not a dishwasher. Mm. I've had my tip docked for food that came late. I'm not a cook.
By the paying customer, you mean?
Right. I've had my tip docked for a long line at the door, which I can do nothing about. So my pay fluctuates very much on the service and reliability of every single person in the restaurant. I could give impeccable service and still not receive a good tip. And that's just not a good business model. And it's not a good model for employees.
Now, the first thing that comes to mind is that every job I've ever had, everybody thinks they know everything about everybody else's jobs, especially the boss, right up to the boss, including and especially the boss. when you get to the higher positions, often you see that things you didn't before. You see that they don't work as you thought they did. But this is a common workroom conversation. You know, if my boss really knew how to run this company, he would do this, that, and the other. We need a different model. This model doesn't work. It's not fair. It's whatever. Sorry, distracted by my computer going on here. But the idea that now that this woman has become an elected official, somehow it's her role as a 20-something former waitress to structure the entire restaurant industry in Rhode Island. I mean, if you listen to her what she's saying there, if it would work better, the employers would do these things, right? This is bad and hard for your employees, so we're going to force you now to do additional stuff. It's going to be good for you. Don't worry about it. But businesses aren't in the business of to hurt their employees. Restaurant owners, or good ones, have to know how valuable their employees are. They have to know that customers don't come in there to talk to them. That's not a surprise to a restaurant owner, and you know, in a small deli type places, that's probably the case. But they know that the business model is built around that knowledge, and they're not in the business of losing money. And it's not the role of somebody to become a cog in the legislative machine and thereby reinvent the restaurant industry to change. And this goes on throughout the economy in Rhode Island. Every little thing the government knows best, how to run your business, how to run your life, how to do this or that, that you need to do, how to raise your children. And that's the next one coming up. But when did we get to this idea? Why is a relatively conservative talk radio host nodding along with this sentiment and not saying, whoa, 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 wait a second. I actually agree with you on how the restaurant runs, although Tara's family ran a restaurant, so you'd think she would have the other perspective as well. But that's not your job as a legislator. And when you amp that up and you look at every company and every employee, I sometimes think that in government, people take over a government agency of some kind, and it's almost like they get to play at business. It's like a fun little, oh, let's try this and let's play at this, and oops, we lost a bunch of money. Oops, our employees were doing something they shouldn't, and they ripped off the taxpayers for hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, oops, what do you know? Well, this is just public service. You know, so these things happen. It's hard. It's hard work. Maybe rein in what you think government should be doing. And this brings me to Senator Leonidas, or Lou Raptakis, who was on Dan York's show again, rapid fire. Last time it was minimum wage. This time it's his bill to give police authority to arrest and lock up parents who leave their kids in the car. Now, from news reports, in the clip, Raptakis keeps saying that it's children up to 7, but there's actually some circumstances when it could be children up to 14. So where if you leave your child up to 14 years old in the car for more than 5 minutes on a very cold or very hot day, then you can be taken away and arrested. And what's interesting here to start with is Raptakis's rationale. So listen to this.
What I don't want to do is when you have these individuals that either go to the casino, gamble, figure out to go to a tavern, and there was one incident I think last couple years ago where somebody left their youngster at 12 o'clock midnight in a car and decided to go to a Providence tavern for about an hour. Then you had the other one. There was another individual, I believe, I'm not sure if it was Twin River. He left a four-year-old in a vehicle. Then you had the other incident in the middle of the winter where temperatures were about 12, 13 degrees, and she decided to go shopping at the mall, not Providence Mall, but the neighborhood state up in Mass.
Now, first of all, what makes Senator Raptakis think that parents who are that irresponsible, going out drinking and leaving their kids in the car, are going to stop and go, oh, you know, I really would love to leave my 4-year-old here in the car in the middle of the night while I go out drinking, but it's against the law. I mean, I'm with Dan York. He was surprised that this isn't against the law. There's nothing the cops can do already. But these parents, these irresponsible parents, are not going to change their behavior. You're going to still get the periodic idiot who does these things, even though it's illegal. Just now you get to punish them, and I guess we can all feel good about it. But the second point, and here's where we're looking at these handful of people who are just irresponsible. And there are other cases, the really tragic ones, where just the parent is overtired, distracted, the child falls asleep in a car seat or something, and the parent gets out and goes into work just forgetting, I didn't drop my child off. That I don't know how that happens, and it's terrible, terrible, terrible. But if that's the case, a law against it isn't going to help either. So this is mainly going to affect parents who are more responsible than these people being described. So imagine how this plays out for parents who do try to be responsible and law-abiding and all that. Now, the parent makes the decision to leave the child in the car. I'm running into the store for just a minute. It's not the child's old enough and mature enough. I'm comfortable with them being in the car. Whatever. It's not that hot. Maybe the window's open. If it's a 13-year-old, the window's open. I don't know if the law has specifications for what degree the windows have to be open in a hot car. So the parent makes this decision. In that individual circumstance, with that individual child, and goes away from the car for a bit. Some busybody sees this and calls the police. Or maybe the police observe the person leaving, and rather than, hey, psst, psst, just so you know, your kid's in a car. You know, they wait for 5 minutes, and then you're under arrest. So at some point this clock starts, and you've got 5 minutes to get back to the car. And all right, now you're a parent, and you're just trying to take care of something real quick, and you've made the judgment your child will be all right in a car for a couple minutes. Maybe something slows you down, and 6-7 minutes, who knows? But and maybe during that time, if it's hot or cold, the officer breaks into the car. That might even be reasonable. Or just waits for the parent to return. And now the parent comes back. The officer reprimands the parent in front of the child and maybe takes him or her away in handcuffs and does something with the custody of the child, either calls another parent or somebody else or protective services or who knows, over a 6 minute leaving in the car of that the parent had judged was a responsible thing to do in the circumstances. Worse, though, is this feeling like we're turning police into like the security guards at a water park, right? You remember as a kid, maybe if you weren't as mischievous as I was, maybe it doesn't apply. But remember as a kid, you're at a water park or Great Adventure or whatever, and you see the security type people, and they're sort of half watching to make sure nothing goes wrong and you don't slip and get hurt or whatever, and they're half watching you to make sure you don't do anything wrong and you're following the rules. Is that the society we want to live in? Do we want police there looking in the name of catching irresponsible parents who aren't paying attention to the law anyway or their responsibilities, watching over our shoulders, making sure, you know what, I'm just making sure that as a parent, you're doing the right thing. We've decided. The legislator, the waitress, the currently, you know, the young former waitress at the state house has decided, and a bunch of corrupt people who keep being arrested and for various reasons and who do all kinds of sleazy stuff in the background with our laws, those people, they've decided that me as a police officer carrying a gun gets to watch you and here with my stopwatch out here and figure out how long you've had your child in the car. And now, never mind that every time you create these laws, you create the potential for tragic conflict. We heard a lot about that in the last few years, where something went wrong and somebody ended up dead in a misunderstanding. Now, every time you create this law, you're creating the possibility for that, especially when you've got the police on the street criticizing and maybe arresting a parent as a bad parent. Think of the emotions involved in that and the risk of losing your child, going to jail, all this stuff for going into a store and not getting back within the 5 minutes allowed by the General Assembly. How is this the role of government? Couldn't we have a society where somebody leaves a kid in a car, and if you're a busybody, you know, and you've got some time, you notice that and you say, you know, I'm just going to linger here and make sure the child's safe. Or goes up to the parent and says, hey, you know, you left your kid in a car. Or even in a, it doesn't have to be criticism. It can be helpful. Say, you know, I just happened to notice that you left your child in the car, and it's taken a while. So I just wanted to come in and make sure, see if there's anything I can do to help you get back to the child in the car. I mean, can we get back to that kind of a society where we're not offloading all of our responsibilities and actually destroying the foundations of community, which is you and me interacting? We're destroying that in order to feel good about we gave it at the office. We gave it to the government. The government's going to take care of it. So, you know what? If saying no to this isn't the role of government, I don't want to destroy my community and take my neighbor's money for my pet projects and whatever. If that makes me evil, if that makes you evil, I say embrace it, because then that term has no meaning whatsoever. That's it for this time. I'll back in a week. As always, the relevant links are on the post associated with this podcast, and I hope you'll check back next time. Oh, you know, and also share. Go ahead. Facebook, tweet, whatever else you want to do, email around, you know, good, bad, and I'll see you next week. I never looked for trouble, but I never ran. I don't take no orders from no kind of man. I'm only made out of flesh, blood, and bone. If you're gonna start a rumble, don't you try it all alone, because I'm evil. My middle name is Misery. Because I'm evil, so don't you mess around with me.